is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. This is episode 348, an episode that we did not anticipating did not anticipate doing early on. We thought this was going to be a week off, but Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, he joins me as we do almost all of our shows. Seth, we were going to have a week off, get ready for free agency, and then boom, we've got some more Kyler Murray news. How about that?
Yeah, that's the way it works, man. I mean, it's the offseason and the quarterback that, let's be honest, half the fan base never wanted because they wanted to go with Josh Rosen, is stirring things up. And now those people are back out in full force. We were right. Look at us. We should have kept Josh Rosen and won 6 combined games the last 3 years.
Oh man! Well, if you have been living in under a rock over the last few days, you'll be surprised to know that Kyler Murray is in the news once again. Just when we thought that everything had been tided over with the Cardinals and Kyler Murray and the drama involved, boom! Monday morning, his agent releases a statement. And oh my gosh! So we're going to talk about that statement. We're going to talk about our initial reaction to Eric Burkhart's statement that he released to Adam Schefter about Kyler Murray getting a contract, the Cardinals' long-term commitment, winning Super Bowls, and all that good stuff. We're going to break that down. We're going to talk about the part about the commitment. We're going to look at the contract proposal, or what the supposed contract proposal there was. Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim were at the NFL Combine on Tuesday and addressed the media and kind of talked a little bit about it. And ultimately, we'll wrap it up talking about, wait, should the Cardinals go ahead and pull the trigger and get Kyler Murray extended this offseason? So let's kick this things off. So, you know, so if you haven't seen it, Kyler Murray's agent, Eric Burkhart, this was, you know, it was 7 in the morning. I'd just gotten to my day job, and I see this hit. I see this hit Twitter, and I open it up, and it's this image of this document. And my first thing he's saying is, like, who wants to read that? It's a lengthy statement in all caps. It was not easy to read. It is stating from the, I'll go ahead and read through it. It says, Kyler wants to be direct with loyal Arizona Cardinals fans in the great community of the Valley of in stating his two very important goals and objections. One, he absolutely wants to be your long-term quarterback. Two, he desperately wants to win the Super Bowl. Achieving both goals will take incredible commitment from himself and the entire organization, and goes on to do to say a number of things. So then in bold, nearly at the bottom, there's two bolded parts. I'll go ahead and read it. It says, actions speak much louder than words in this volatile business. And then at the end, Kyler remains hopeful that the organization chooses to commit so that he can continue to leading the Cardinals to further success and value for many years to come. Whew! Just when we thought that maybe this nonsense from the offseason was not contract-related, all of a sudden it became very firmly contract-related. What was your reaction when you heard the statement came out initially?
I mean, I'm not shocked. I mean, it is what it is, and they're playing the game and trying to, you know, get into the contract extension, what, 6 months early? It's February.
And pretty much July, August, at the beginning of training camp or right before
five,
it.
5-6 months early. And, you know, it's unfortunate that that it's happening this way, but let's be honest. I mean, are we shocked it's happening this way with the Arizona Cardinals? I mean, their captain the last three seasons has asked to be traded. Patrick Peterson, you know, Chandler Jones. Now,
and Jordan Hicks.
Yeah, Jordan Hicks. And so, and now, you know, Kyler hasn't allegedly asked for a trade yet. And so, but, you know, it feels like if things aren't reached at that point, you know, it could be coming. And I mean, we can say a lot of things. We can, one, this is business. It's just, let's be honest, the Cardinals haven't had a player good that moved the meter enough to do this lately. You know, like the only player that they've ever had that's been good in terms of, you know, kind of all pro-ish, Pro Bowl type stuff has been Fitz. And they paid Fitz early. They paid
Peterson. Him early and often. They did, yeah, Fitz.
They paid Peterson early. You know, and so, I mean, hell, they paid DeAndre early when they traded for him, right? Like, so, I mean, it's interesting. There's some things going on inside and outside of the Cardinals that factors into this that we can get into when you're ready.
Yeah, it's, my initial reaction was, well, all the words. That's the first thing it's on a Monday morning. Why do you release it like that? You could have done that much more succinctly. But we're going with this, the same approach as we've kind of seen other approaches with how the organization came out with that, well, leaked that information to Chris Mortensen about kind of their feeling about Kyler Murray. Scorched earth has kind of been the theme this offseason. And then I was just like, oh, agent posturing. And this is Eric Burkhart and Kyler Murray firmly pressing the organization. It felt like last week when Michael Bidwell was on Arizona Sports 98.7 on the local radio for Newsmakers Week, which curiously Steve Keim was not a part of, as he has been every year since 2013. Bidwell was on, and it kind of, there was the report Thursday night how everything between the Cardinals and Kyler Murray is copacetic. Michael Bidwell saying he's a big fan of Kyler Murray. He says he's gonna get better. I love the guy. He's going to be our quarterback long term. And then, boom, Monday morning, we're back to, hey, the Cardinals are not committing to their quarterback. I just, while it's clearly an agent ploy to continue to pressure the Cardinals, to put pressure on the Cardinals to take care of his client. And that's, you know, I don't know if I agree necessarily with the...
No, with, the tactic is
I, but then again, what speedy. Else do you do?
Well, and, you know, and allegedly, I mean, we'll... Oh, well, we can get to that. Go ahead.
But that's the thing, is what else do you do if you, and we're going to talk about, they supposedly took a contract offer to the table. And so if in private, they're not going to feel that pressure to do what ultimately the agent and Kyler's goals are, you take it to the next level. You take it to the next level. And what's strategic about this is it comes directly from his agent, and so what Kyler is saying is about football and stability, and his agent's talking about money.
Yeah, and I mean, those two coincide, you know, pretty well, and that's it, man. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a business, and we all have to remember that, and there are, you know, realities that come from this. And one of the realities is that, you know, players want to get paid when they can, as much as they can. And, you know, we hit on Larry Fitzgerald earlier. You know, it's always interesting to me that people laud Larry for a lot of things, right? Like being, you know, a cardinal for life and being loyal. And then, well, I mean, Larry did all that. You're right. But has anybody ever stepped back and looked at the fact that he's literally the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history?
He never relinquished leverage on his contract ever.
And I'm not going to try, you know, is Larry Fitzgerald one of the greatest players ever? Yes, absolutely. He was an All-Pro one time in his career. Once. Now, again, that's not saying anything. That's not taking away from, you know, but the Cardinals paid him more than any other non-quarterback in NFL history for one All-Pro season. And people are like, well, you can't pay Kyler Murray top five quarterback money. He's not a top five quarterback. You paid top five, or you paid top one receiver money to a receiver that was the best receiver in the NFL one time. Like, what's the difference? But that's the thing, is like, people were okay with Fitz because he didn't say anything publicly. But as you said, he never had to. He was taken care of. He was taken care of to an extent that no other player in NFL history had been taken care of. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you know, it's really easy to be like, he should be like Larry. Okay, well, then treat him like Larry, right? Like, pay him like you did Larry. Pay him an astronomical amount of money without having to have this happen. But that never happened. And so, you know, remember, Larry Fitzgerald was getting quarterback money as a wide receiver in the late 2000s, early 2010s. The Cardinals had to lose guys like Anquan Boldin and thing, you know.
That was essentially it, is that Anquan Boldin left because organizationally they couldn't commit money to both him and Fitz.
Yeah, and remember, I mean, the other thing is this, and people like to have this revisionist history on things. This organization made Kurt Warner get on an airplane to go to San Francisco to take an interview before they decided to pay him. Remember, like, this isn't a new thing. This is how the Cardinals have unfortunately done business for a long time. And now you've got a player who, you know, is trying to control the power to an extent that we're seeing quarterbacks, especially in the NFL, do. And it's just, it's such a change. And you know, whether or not you and I agree with the tactics, it's the reality of the NFL now. I mean, you've got Aaron Rodgers holding the Green Bay Packers hostage. You have Russell Wilson holding the Seattle Seahawks hostage. This is the thing, is if you're a quarterback that's worth their salt, then and you want to control the financial or whatever the narrative is, it's going to happen.
Yeah, totally. Now, the question is I have for you before we move on to the next part is it too much too fast in terms of what the agent did? I think what it does, I personally wouldn't do it, and maybe it's too much too fast, but what it does, it hangs something over the organization's head all off season. So we're going to be looking at every single free agent move and wondering, are they skipping out on Kyler? Are they punting it? Are they punting? Are they waiting till the offseason? And there's reasons why they would, because right now the priority is free agency for guys around Kyler when Kyler's already under contract. But I almost say it's too much too fast, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, let's put that pressure on him. Like, let's make this, let's have this hanging over their head. I know for fans that's not going to be super pleasant, but why not hang it over the Cardinals' head for a little while to sort of keep them honest when it comes to their intent for keeping him long-term?
Yeah, and that's the thing too, man, is like, you look at it, this is about stability to an organization that's never had any. And when you look at it from the perspective of how is he going about it, and you just allow that to be the narrative or be how you're looking at things, right? The microcosm of things of, well, I don't like that he's, you know, putting this pressure on the organization, or that, you know, he's demanding it before his fourth season. You know, he's never even won a playoff game. But at the same time, you're talking about the third, I believe it's the third losingest professional sports franchise in all of North American sports. You're talking literally about an organization that the 11 wins this season was tied for the second most in franchise history. And you're talking about a 24-year-old that looks like he's got, what, 10, 11, 12 years of Pro Bowl football left in him, that set, you know, franchise and NFL records in his first three seasons, that's saying, let's get this locked in for the next 6 years so that people know the direction of this franchise. And people are going, I don't like the way he's going about it, instead of reading it as he wants to be here and he wants to be a part of the change of culture that this franchise is desperately needed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They've never had a quarterback. Now, have they ever had a quarterback worth paying this much? Yeah, probably not. Probably not. But... But the intent that he has of winning is palpable. Now people are saying he's pouty, whatever. But point of the matter is, was it too much too early? That's tough to say, but I don't mind it. I don't mind it, and I like that there is a little bit of something that the Cardinals aren't used to, and that's where keeping things super quiet. It's not being hostile. It's not requesting a trade, but it is saying, hey, you need to take care of me. You know, are you committed? You're saying you're committed to me, but are you really committed to me? Because, like, as it says in the statement, we know full well that in the NFL, promises for money down the road are only promises. Promises don't pay bills. Promises don't set your family up for life. Actual money does. And when it comes to how do you show a player that you're committed to them, you pay them. That's how it works in this business.
Right. And that's the thing is, you know, when do these third, fourth year extensions come? Like we said, they usually come in July or August. But this is an unprecedented situation. You don't see 11 win teams that made a playoff go into an offseason with a lame duck head coach and general manager. It just doesn't happen. So from that standpoint, there needs to be some sort of show for management of what the direction of this franchise is. And quite frankly, whether or not you agree with the way Murray goes about it, that has to happen. And it's just, I don't know why it's just not happening. And instead, what you're getting is this us versus them mentality, or us versus Murray mentality of fans. And it's just going to, I don't know. We'll see it. We'll see.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's take our next subject, which is the commitment part, and we can touch on it. We'll talk about that more coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. One of the things that is very firm in this statement is the idea of commitment. Okay, it starts off. He gives the two goals. He wants to be the long-term quarterback for the Cardinals, and he desperately wants to win the Super Bowl. This is what he says in the statement. Achieving both goals will take incredible commitment from himself and the entire organization. Okay? And then it talks about what he's accomplished, yada, 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 all sorts of things. He says, looking ahead, Kyler believes that in order to consistently compete for championships and ultimately deliver the Valley their first Super Bowl in 33-plus years, there needs to be long-term stability for both the organization and himself. To overtly communicate Kyler's desire to be the Cardinals' long-term quarterback, we'll talk about that more later. So, but he believes that to win a Super Bowl, that there needs to be both commitment to him and the organization. Is there anything false about that statement?
No, that, and that's where people are, you know, one, not reading the statement, because let's be honest, that's a really long and small typed out statement. Like, you know, my buddy Kyle Posey tweeted out, he could have just saved a lot of time and just said, stop drafting inside linebackers in round one. Like, but, yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at it, the reality is the commitment has been a lot of dog and pony show, a good way to put it. What did they do? They went and, you know, signed J.J. Watt. You and I like the move. You know, we're not going to go back and be revisionists. We like the move. We both were very concerned about spending the money they did on a guy that has not played a ton of football lately. And I think we were both right in our concerns. And, you know, they came to fruition. We both love the Rodney Hudson move. You know, and then he misses, I think, what, 6 games for the first time in 3 years, but, or 4 years. But also, I mean, that's what happens when you go after 34-year-old centers. And so, and then he just, I mean, he literally had the worst year of his career in the last, I think, decade. And so you make these moves that on paper, if they stay healthy, if they work out, they're great moves, but they don't work out. You know, you signed an AJ Green, and you and I were both kind of like, I mean, let's be honest, they got more out of Green than we expected, but there were a lot of times during the season where Green was aloof and inconsistent, and those things happen. And you know, so there was a lot of lipstick on a pig type moves, you know, where you, and we knew that this roster was razor thin in the sense of, you know, that first 22 is probably not too bad, but once you get to about 24, oh, there's some problems. And you know, in the first 7 games, they had those 22, and then they had those first 23, 24, and then you got to 25, then you got to 30, and then you got to 35, and it was like, oh, this is not pretty. And it coincided with Murray not playing well. You know, and it's interesting. I was going to, you know, talk about this. Murray had the same injury. I mean, they never really came out and said, but, you know, the people I've spoken to told me he had the same injury that Ole Miss quarterback Matt Corral has. Matt Corral is taking 5 months to fully recover from his injury. Kyler Murray took 5 weeks. So when you talk about now this isn't me making an excuse for the drop or decline in his level of play. There was a clear decline in level of play. But this is a reality that a guy was clearly less than 100% towards the end there, and it showed in the team and his own play.
Right. So, you know, high ankle sprains are no joke. It's basically what completely wiped out Jimmy Garoppolo's 2020 season. What a lot of people don't know, if they recall the 2019 or the 2020 game last year against the Rams, where he came out with an ankle injury and then came back in late in the game, that it was a high ankle sprain. The fact that he came back in the game was something amazing. he was rehabbing that for a whole month after the season was over, before he went back home to Texas. So the high ankle thing, and so after he came back after three games, and so he's playing at less than 100% using talent that is far less than 100%, and an offensive line that I don't know what I do not understand what happened to the offensive line in the second half of the season, because their decline was precipitous from the start of the season. It was, I do not know, understand what happened there, why the offensive line got so bad late in the year. But yeah, there's something I kind of want to mention is this. Is I found this interesting, and it was a comment that Gungus from Revenge of the Birds, one of the users there on Twitter, is a guy we all know. He pointed out, and it kind of pointed this out to me as well, and this is what the comment about commitment to the organization, there needs to be long-term stability for both the organization and himself. Now, Cliff Kingsbury said that this is completely separate because Eric Burkhardt is, you know, not only represents Murray, but also represents Kingsbury. But it's kind of interesting that the language here, it says it's long-term stability for Kyler and the organization, separating them, which really is, I felt, and tell me if you agree or disagree, that was Burkhart's subtle way of also including his other client. This was about Kyler Murray, but subtly including his other client in Cliff Kingsbury as part of that long-term stability.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is there's not any stability going into this offseason. Like, that's, I just can't stress this enough to people. What it tells the rest of the league and free agents and agents of players about this organization, that one of the most successful three-year runs or three-year builds for the Cardinals in their franchise's history is being rewarded with nothing, literally nothing. No contract extensions. You go in not knowing your future. You go in not knowing the future of your coaching staff, your GM. Like, that's baffling. And so when they talk about that, it I don't know why it doesn't resonate with more people outside of the fact that they can't disconnect the way that this is happening with the truth that is within that statement. And so they have this organization that is in complete disarray, that agents of players and coaches are saying, what is going on? I'm not going to send my clients there. We don't even know who the coach and GM is going to be next year. Why would I risk my client for a year where, if things don't go right, and by don't go right, we mean, like, what if they go 10-7 and they're like, well, that's just not good enough, and now they fire him, or 9-8 and you know, miss the playoffs. Do you fire everybody? Because I mean, that was a regression. So now we fire everybody. You know, and so that's the thing. You're literally setting yourself up to be this make or break season, but there's it's going to be really hard to get the right pieces in here to fill those gaps. You know, so now you're going to get second level 1 year type of guys. You're not going to get You're not going to, and maybe you weren't anyway, but like, would a JC Jackson really come here and risk his free agency, like his prime free agency year, to potentially just be on a team that is going to fire their GM, head coach, you know, and defensive coordinator after the season? Like that is what he's talking about when you're talking about organizational stability. And again, that just gets overlooked by all the pundits that are upset because they're like, this is not how you should go about doing business. And again, I don't think Jess and I disagree with that statement. We're not necessarily fans of how Kyler is trying, or, you know, Burkhardt or whoever it is trying to get to the end goal. But we see what the end goal is. And yes, part of it is money for Kyler. We completely acknowledge that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a young franchise quarterback. Quarterbacks get paid. And quarterback is a position where things can go bad quickly. So, and the example that you mentioned, Baker Mayfield, after they didn't extend him, he had a rough year. Injuries and more injuries, and the Browns underachieved. Lamar Jackson this year, injured. He did not have those are the two very clear examples of what happens when you say you're committed to a quarterback, but then don't actually commit to the quarterback.
Right, and so that's the other thing is, like, you know, people want to point defense, and I get that. That's you know, the guy. And people want to point to him as, like, you know, look at how well right the organization does players by. But again, like, you have one example of that. You know, people say, well, what about Carson Palmer? That was a fluke. I mean, again, that was they got Palmer for pennies on the dollar.
And they paid him.
And then they paid him immediately, remember?
Yeah, they paid him, and then he got hurt immediately. After that, immediately.
And then, you know, and that's what I said. Look, I go back to Kurt Warner. Like, Warner literally had to go get on a plane and go take a meeting with San Francisco to get Bidwell to be like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll pay him. Like, you had Tyrann Mathieu. You had, I mean, like, all pro players. Tyrann Mathieu, Calais Campbell, Anquan Boldin. Like, the list of guys that have gone on and gotten paid by other franchises and produced at high levels and have, quite frankly, not had great things to say about the Cardinals. That is the culture, and that is the belief of who this organization is. And people are like, yeah, but he needs to be like Fitz. He just needs to be happy that he's on the roster. Like, let's be honest. He should just be happy he's on the team. And that the Cardinals allow him to suit up instead of being like, hey, this guy is pushing for cultural change within the organization. Again, going about it, not my favorite type of way, not what I would have done, not the way I would have approached it. But again, if they allegedly brought a contract extension and offer to the table and then did not get a response from the Cardinals, which, by the way, would be the third player that's allegedly done that after Patrick Peterson and Chandler Jones, then there is an issue. Because, again, you're saying we want to commit to you, and then you're saying we're not going to talk contract negotiations with you. And we said the same thing last week about when we talked about DJ Humphreys. Like, what's the plan, man? Like, you got a 29-year-old left tackle. You either need to pay him and he needs to retire a Cardinal at 32, or you need to cut him and you need to have a plan. But, like, this whole, we're going to go in for one more year with Humphreys at, what is this, $15.5 million cap hit? Like, that's not a plan. That's just saying, hey, we're going to sit back and see what happens this season. and then make decisions. And it, when has that ever worked in the NFL?
It's interesting because if they don't, then it's basically saying it's sending the message to pretty much all your players. You're never getting that third contract from us.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, but that's, again, another thing that we know about this organization. They, you know, outside of Fitz, who have they really taken care of? I mean, Darnell Dockett left mad, right? Like, I'm trying to remember, like, who's a guy? Adrian Wilson, I guess?
Adrian knew his mortality at that point. He didn't leave with hard feelings, but he was also very close with Steve Keim to begin with. They were close. It's DeAndre Hopkins, I guess, is probably the one other guy where they've taken care of because they just gave him new money in his contract. They're just like, here, have money. And everyone was like, why did you do that? And that was just basically part of the trade deal.
Right. And, you know, it is what it is. Like, at this juncture, it's just figuring out what the direction of the franchise is.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about we don't know the details, but the contract proposal that Burkhardt presented the Cardinals. The details, the little bit of details we could get out of that, and what it would have meant. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. An interesting fact, part of this statement, was the revelation that Burkhardt made a contract offer to the Cardinals. He says, to overtly communicate Kyler's desire to be the Cardinals' long-term quarterback, we sent a detailed contract proposal to the organization. It was important to Kyler that his proposal reflected all of the following. Provides financial protection. Okay, makes sense. Long-term. Guaranteed. So essentially, that this is my interpretation thereof. So financial protection, both in terms of that's going to include guarantees and length, is in line with the current quarterback market that compares with his results alongside relevant comps. So that makes him, that puts him in the ballpark of the Dak Prescotts, the Josh Allens, the Deshaun Watts, the Patrick Mahomes. Lowers his 2022 and 2023 salary cap number to allow the Cardinals to re-sign other deserving teammates and add additional free agents, and that's the important part, the cap hit, and most importantly, represents a real commitment from the organization to see if their ultimate goals align with his two above, consistently competing for championships and Kyler being their quarterback. This is the interesting thing, because I know part of why, and I'll be honest, I didn't think that signing Kyler to the contract extension, that there would be a legitimate way to lower this year's cap number. And if you saw on Twitter, Burkhardt also took to Twitter and shared basically the last five. There's five young quarterbacks that got extension after third. You got Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, and Jared Goff. And he shared the cap hit for those first 2 years. And so he kind of stressing the fact that, so even with this year, where he's scheduled to have an $11.6 million cap hit, that could have been reduced, which adds flexibility this year. It could have reduced the potential cap hit in 2023, in 2023. And then before things get big the year after. How much would you suppose the length and the per year average was going to be?
I would guess 45. So probably 6 for 45.
And so that you would have put him given him another 4 years or another 5 years after this year, or that it was going to be 6 years beyond this one.
So did they do seven for Mahomes?
Wasn't his something? I don't remember. It seemed like an absurd amount.
Maybe. See, I was thinking, yeah, so this year and then six after.
Okay. And so that.
Or maybe this year. Yeah, I think that's how it will work.
Because that's kind of the hard thing with how they word it. Because if it's a 6 year contract extension, sometimes that the six years includes this year, or sometimes it's the 6 year extension to it. So it sometimes goes either way.
It's hard to figure out.
But there was a number that came out from somebody from Pro Football Focus that said 6 years, $275.8 million. I don't know if that, like, I'm not going to say that came out. That number, I'm sure, had some research behind it, and it probably might have matched what they proposed the Cardinals. Now, let's kind of look at the number. So it would have been possible to reduce Kyler Murray's cap number this year. But so cap numbers, how that goes, for those of you who are not as cap literate per se, how it works is that your cap hit is the amount of your current year salary and money paid this year, plus the proration of your bonus, or specifically signing bonus or other restructuring bonuses. And that gets prorated through the length of the contract up through 5 years. So now there was a local radio host suggested that it would be super easy for the Cardinals to get Kyler's cap hit to like 5 to 6 million. I will tell you, that is literally impossible, because it is impossible. So the lowest his cap hit could be this year is just under 7 million. He has a $5.9 million proration bonus. So that's 5.9 million left on his signing bonus cap hit. That has to happen. And then his salary is going to be just under $1 million. So if he took no new money this year, which I will tell you, no agent is going to do, then his cap hit would be $7 million. If the smallest reasonable cap hit would be an $8 million cap hit thereabouts, because he is due $4.5 million in a roster bonus in August in training camp. So he was going to get $5.5 million in cash this year. Any new contract would not have paid him anything less than that $5.5 million cash this year. But had they included that, or made that $4.5 million, or if we want to make it an even $5 million, they could have made that $5 million signing bonus paying him now. Use that 960, and he gets his salary of nearly $1 million, and his cap hits right at about $8 million. That still lowers his cap hit by $3.5 million over the 11.6 he was supposed to have. So that is very possible, but that would be adding no new money. It would just be paying his current money a little earlier, a few months earlier. And I'm sure that his potential contract also included a large chunk of guarantees, were probably 2022, 2023, and 2024. All of that money was probably fully guaranteed, if I had to guess.
Right. And that's the thing, is like, again, don't get any of this twisted, any of it. Kyler was looking to cash in. He was also looking at the roster, the holes on the roster, and saying, we need money. You and I discussed this last week. This team is in financial distress when it comes to salary cap space and their needs. And extending him frees up that, you know, frees up some of that money. It's not a ton. It frees up some of that money.
But that's worth that, you know, $3.5 million. That is, on in salary cap terms, that is potentially a quality player you add to the roster at $3.5 million.
Right. And you know, that's probably like a starting guard type of thing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a depth person. Or like we talked about, maybe you're able to re-sign a Max Williams at that price for year one.
Totally. So we'll ask the question down the line, but if you're giving him, if you're saying 6 years, $275 million. Oh, here's the other part. Next year on the fifth year option, which the Cardinals will, they will pick that up. There's no question to that. He's that salary is going to be somewhere between $25 and $30 million, depending on how the quarterback salaries balance out. Based on the beginning of this year, he would have been due $25 million based on the fact he hit two Pro Bowls in his first 3 years. But it looks like quarterback salaries, and the number that Seth gave you before the show is about $29 million. So that would have been a $29 million salary, and it would equal his salary cap hit. So to structure that contract extension where he gets his roster bonus money this year early, again, as you're working with, if you're talking about how agents work with their clients, is that if Kyler was going to get $29 billion in cash last year, well, you can guarantee that his agent's not going to structure a deal where he does gets nothing less. He gets anything less than $29 billion in cash. And so what likely would happen is then they pay him another one of those, it wouldn't be a roster bonus because that would hit that year, but you pay him an option bonus, you call it. You call it an option bonus that's fully guaranteed of $25 million. And then that prorates over the next 5 years. So you've got a $5 million cap hit. And then you pay him $10 million in salary. So now he's getting $40, or rather, so there he's getting $35 million in new money this year, and his cap hit's only 15. And so you've essentially saved $14 million in cap space next year, so you still have flexibility. It's just that what ends up happening, then everything escalates the next year in 2024 and beyond. But here's the thing. When we're looking down the line, we're looking at a team who wants to win now. Does it matter what that cap is down the line?
No, and that's why it's baffling to see how this is playing out, because it does seem like, and this is the conspiracy, you know, theorist in me, and the guy that just doesn't, I guess, you know, doesn't believe in what is being said about their commitment towards Kyler, is that it almost seems like they want to keep as much money free as possible in case they want to move on from everybody. Right? Like, all of a sudden, they owe no coaches money. They don't owe the GM money. And they have on the quarterback is his fourth, you know, is his fifth year option. And so really what you're saying is that, and then all those like veteran contracts kind of fall off after 23, which is the year that Kyler would be in his fifth year option. So what you're saying is that, you know, you're giving a guy, you know, potentially a head coach and GM 1 year of Kyler while you look for or potentially trade him. Like, that's just what it feels like. And I know people are going to be like, well, that's stupid. They just want everybody to prove something.
They want something. But the bottom line is they want them to prove it because of the money. Right.
Right. So they're like, that's why I said, this is what the most baffling thing is to me, is like fans and ownership are like, prove it. And you're like, okay, extend me. And they're saying, no, we're not going to extend you because you have to prove it. And in turn, they're going, okay, but we're not going to be able to get, you know, improve through free agency or add the right pieces unless you give us some sort of, you know, vote of confidence, and instead they're going, that's right, you need to prove it with what's on the roster, what we already have, continue to improve, and you don't get any new pieces to play with. Yeah, we've already given you enough. And it's like, that's not how the NFL works, man.
It's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy. Now, coming next on Reserve C Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, Cliff and Keim. Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim spoke at the NFL Combine on Tuesday. We'll talk about the things that they said next. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web on Tuesday. So this was also strategically timed by Eric Burkhart. Michael Bidwill was on local radio on Friday. Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury were set to speak with the media on Tuesday. So if he releases a statement, strongly worded, lengthy, on Monday, guess what people are going to ask about? And that was certainly the case at the Combine in Indianapolis. Is Keim and Cliff were both asked several questions about the status of Kyler Murray. None of what they said was surprising. Keim talked about how it sounds like an agent doing his job. He doesn't take this personally. He spoke about tactics. You know, he did not say anything about whether he thought Burkhart's statement was warranted. And then Cliff, who actually shares an agent, Burkhart is also his agent, says he loves Burkhart, he loves Kyler. Nothing's going to change. He loves both those guys. And, though the one thing I took away, when we listen to Cliff Kingsbury talk about Kyler Murray still, and I will say this because we talked about the other show, there is no way on this earth that Cliff Kingsbury was the one that had those comments that Chris Mortensen said about Kyler Murray. They most certainly did not come from Cliff Kingsbury, because he loves Kyler. He talks regularly with Kyler, but it's about football. It just reassured me. It gave me that. It told me yet again, no, Cliff Kingsbury is in love with the notion of coaching Kyler Murray. He loves him. He believes he is a big time quarterback. And the side comment, the kind of what he said about, well, DeAndre Hopkins' injury and not scheming well enough. You know what I think part of that is? I think that is his ultimate trust in Kyler Murray and to be able to make things happen. And he probably relied on his quarterback too much to make plays with the guys who were on the roster, even when DeAndre was out. And so I see a coach who happens to have the same agent. He said he stays out of the business. And personally, that's the only way you've got to do the head coaching. You have to stay out of the business, because if we take it back to the Anquan Boldin days, the fact that Ken Wisenhunt was in those conversations at all was part of the problem that Anquan Boldin had. So Cliff Kingsbury is just football. He does nothing when it comes to the business. I'm sure if Cliff had it his way, everyone would get paid and they wouldn't have any salary cap room. And that's how, as a coach, you have to do it. You cannot have you cannot have your relationship deal with the contracts as well. It has to just be football, and that's all that is. But other than that, there wasn't anything that surprised me about what they said, other than, hey, Cliff loves Kyler, and it's very evident of that.
You know, it's you see a coach that, like you said, truly, and man, dude, every time Cliff talks, I know some people get irritated with him. He's just so refreshing to listen to. Is he not? Like, a guy that he never puts anybody else on blast. Like, he's the problem. He's always the problem, and he's fine. It's almost like, hey, I'm a big boy. I can, you know, wasn't it my gun? I'm a man. I'm 40. Like, I can, I'm the one that can handle this stuff. Like, come talk to me if you got something to say.
But at the same time, he says nothing.
Well, but I mean, he says things that are true. Like, he's, you know, I think what he does is he does a nice job of not putting the onus on individuals, but instead on the collective, and saying, you know, we need to do this.
That is Bill Belichick to a T. Right. He learned that from Belichick.
And he's, you know, and I think, you know, one of the things I think is undersold on this whole process, and we can talk about, you know, whether or not Cliff needs an OC or this or that or the other, is how much players like playing for Cliff. Like, just flat out respect him and like playing for him, because he is the guy that treats them like an adult, and he treats them like they are, you know, professionals. And, you know, you and I are professionals, and obviously being working class professionals is different than professional athlete professionals. But at the same time, like, I can tell you in my profession, like, one of the big things about a working environment for me is that, you know, my clinic allows me to be a professional. And when we're busy, I'm expected to be there and be, you know, present and available for my patients. And when we don't have patients or patients, you know, are not being seen at that time or whatever the situation is, we're able to, you know, step out. We're able to go to lunch. We're able, and I know it's a completely different type of thing, but like, that's a big thing for adults, right? To be trusted that, like, hey, I'm an adult. Like, I know when I need to be at work and when I don't. Like, I know when I need to be available for work. And so Cliff, in that sense, gives guys this, you know, like, he gives them that feeling of, like, hey, you're an adult. Like, go be an adult. Like, I don't need to do X, Y, and Z to make you play better. You know, instead it's like, I'm just going to allow you to be a player. Like, come in, do your job. If you need somebody to talk to that's been, you know, in your shoes. I mean, and Cliff readily admits he's not, you know, it's not like he was Tom Brady or anything. He, you know, he had a cup of coffee in the NFL. It's not like he was a guy that played a lot, but he knows the grind. He knows what they go through. And I just, man, I just feel like that's an undersold point. And one of the things that, if they do move on, like, that I'm going to miss from covering this team is just having a guy that is really, you know, that never puts players on blast, that he never makes players feel like they're the reason that they're unsuccessful, and instead is always looking to figure out what they can do to get better.
The perfect example that we go back to 2019 was David Johnson, in my opinion, because, you know, and there were conversations, is that he and Cliff had conversations, and Cliff explained to him that it was going to be Kenyon who was going to get the carry, and David Johnson, it wasn't angry, didn't just, he was low-key benched, but, and Johnson wasn't happy about it. He talked about having a conversation, like, we disagree, but those are the that's kind of how Cliff handles things, is, and you see it, he doesn't publicly criticize any player. He talks about the, and he keeps the right amount of separation, you know, from my perspective, from my part of the job, it's so much nicer when they give you information or they go into detail, but he obfuscates, he clouds, like he's, then someone asked him if he'd talked to Murray since the statement, he said, nope. And then, do you talk to Murray regularly? Yes. And then he tried to, like, I was asked if I talked to him since yesterday, since I haven't. We talk regularly. About what? He said, football. That's our job.
Right. And I mean, that's the thing. Again, when you look at it from that perspective, that's one of the things that guys admire about Cliff, is that the first thing Cliff said when he came out was, you know, that's the business side of things. Like, I'm not getting into the business side of things. I'm the football guy. And again, I think that shows who he is as a person and as a coach, that he is a guy that loves you know, his players, and quite frankly, like it's one of those, you know, old axioms, and it's definitely overused, but like it just feels like, you know, he's the type of guy that would be like, hey, I'd die for you, right? Like I'd fight tooth and nail to the death for you.
It's a nice dynamic if you think about it, because we kind of know Cliff doesn't really have control over who makes the roster. I think that's kind of a really good setup for a head coach, because someone else made the hard decision, and then he can say, you guys are my team, and I'm gonna go with you guys.
Yeah, and he does. I mean, I still think about that Jordan Hicks interview at the end of this season, and about every glowing thing he said about Cliff as a coach. And it really trumps everything else for me that we hear from outside people about Cliff, because it just shows that, yeah, Cliff has deficiencies. I mean, you know, Kyler has deficiencies. These guys are not Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But at the same time, man, it's refreshing to hear. It's refreshing to hear how much a guy like Jordan Hicks, that wanted out of the organization because of something outside of Cliff Kingsbury's control, how much he loved playing for and respected how Cliff handled that whole thing. Because as you said, like, it's clear Cliff's not involved in that. Right.
Right. Like, he doesn't have to worry about it. So he can focus only on the relationship with the guys on his roster.
Right. And so now you get a guy that was literally asked to be traded. Like, hey, get me out of here. That's saying, I would play for that guy any day. And like that stuff to me is what you want in a coach. And it sucks that, you know, maybe not having more control over the roster or more say in draft picks. And we don't, you know, now we're kind of spitballing some things, but like in those situations may end up costing him, you know, his job. And, you know, again, based on results, I don't see any reason he should lose his job, but, you know, I also understand that the way the Cardinals have finished the last 2 years leaves a sour taste in people's mouth. And, you know, when you, even if you go 11-6 and lose in the first round of the playoffs, it's not good enough in this NFL day and age. And we know that. And we've seen Doug Peterson get blown out by the Philadelphia Eagles 2 years after he won the franchise's only Super Bowl. Like, this league more now than ever is truly not for long, and it's for coaches and players at a giant clip.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cut on next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to wrap things up, and ultimately we're going to talk. Should the Cardinals do it? Do we believe that this is in the best interest of the team? That's cut on next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, and we're going to come down to the basic question. Should the Cardinals extend Kyler Murray this offseason? Should that be the case? I, for one, and I will say publicly, on a radio show earlier, I believed earlier this offseason, I felt that it would have been better for them to wait till next year to do that. But that was more than anything, it was about managing the cap. It had nothing to do about Kyler Murray. It was all simply about managing the cap. And that potentially he would be able to cash in even more with another season. Here's what I see about Kyler Murray. He was the best rookie in the NFL his rookie year. There was a stretch of a few games in 2020. He looked like, so about midway through the season, he looked like he was an MVP candidate. For the entire first half of the season last year, he was an MVP favorite. That's a trend that you want to see. We don't see a reason why he's going to go backwards. He's only improved, and the only time that he's had issues has been one, injuries around him, or an injuries to self. Now, he's got to overcome some of that, obviously, but when, what more could you ask from your young quarterback? They were a missed Zane Gonzalez kick to making the playoffs a year ago. And they made the playoffs this year. They were one game away from winning the NFC West. And I did point out, I wrote an article on Monday night about Kyler Murray's contract, and that if you look at the five quarterbacks who have signed contract extensions after year three, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, that Kyler is missing one thing in that, and that is his team has not either been to the playoffs twice or won multiple playoff games. Five of those guys, four out of the five guys, took their team to the playoffs and either multiple years or won multiple games in the playoffs. Carson Wentz is the one asterisk to that because his team won the Super Bowl, so they got multiple playoff wins, but he was injured that year, and it was Nick Foles. That said, my belief was that the cap, if it was about the cap, and so next year you give him that deal, so that actually you have two more years of lowered cap hit before you have that. But at this point, I'm like, well, if they offered a contract that lowered this year's cap hit and next year, why the hell not? Honestly, if you really committed to Kyler Murray as your long-term quarterback, and it helps you this year and next year with your goal of winning a championship, I don't care what the cost is down the line. Because if he's that good, if he's good enough, he's worth every penny. He's worth every penny. We've been through quarterback, not just quarterback purgatory. Cardinals fans have gone through quarterback hell for the better part of three decades. You've got a franchise quarterback. Let's not devalue him. You believe he's a franchise quarterback. Steve Keim talked about the skill set. We've never seen a quarterback with his skill set before. So, by all means, let's commit that money, pay him, and let's get this done.
Yeah, and I'm just at the point where, you know, whether they're going to stick with him or not, or whatever their plan is, like, I would just like to see some direction, sense of direction. And there's none whatsoever. Like, and that's the baffling thing with it, is that you're in the midst of this positive 3-year run. You went from 3 wins to 5 wins to 8 wins to 11 wins. You improved every year. You've grown as a organization, and a franchise, and it just feels very much like you're handcuffing yourself going into that fourth year and telling everybody, well, you got to prove it now. And it's like, what is the plan? Why are we stunting the growth of this team that we've seen over the last 3 years? And if we are, what is, like, why not fire everybody now? Like, what is waiting a year gonna do? I guess you're just hoping that everybody stays healthy, that Cliff, you know, takes some onus or some of the things that he's talked about and improves in them, and then Kyler's able to stay healthy and stay strong down the stretch run. And then you'll be like, okay, you all were good boys, and now you deserve your contract extension. Whereas if you just extend Kyler, at least you know what the franchise is going to look like for the next 5 to 7 years.
And if you end up firing Cliff and or Keim, then that coach coming in knows his quarterback.
Right. And that's the thing that I think is really kind of missing, is that this is a franchise stabling situation, and everybody's looking at it as a franchise crippling thing if you sign Kyler. And I think that's where the missing, you know, piece is, that people are saying, well, you're just, you know, you're going to screw up your franchise forever.
Let's look at the history of the franchise. It's right. Not like like I love the Cardinals, and you know me, I'm super supportive of the things they do. I'm always optimistic, but I mean honestly, if the deal ends up being a bad deal and the organization looks bad because of the contract, what else is new?
Right. I mean that's the yeah. And the crazy thing is, the craziest thing is, say you sign him this contract, right? And to your point, like things don't work out. All you have to do if you're Michael Bidwell is you say, look, we fired those guys that signed him to that extension, right? got rid of all those guys.
Yeah. There's the other thing too. So, you know, especially when they, basically the report came out that they want him to be a better leader. When you commit this sort of money to him, you are telling him, okay, it's on you.
Yeah, now it's on you.
It's on you. And you that then Kyler can command, you know, he can carry that. He can carry that because clearly he knows that if he's going to be taking that much part of the contract, that's the thing. So do you either try and build Kyler up with guys around you, or do you turn to your quarterback and say, we believe in you. Okay, we're going to do the best they can. We're going to put the best talent around you, but we're going to pay you what we believe you will be. So now take us there. So it then, like, if the organization pays him, it sort of takes them off the hook in some ways.
Right. It just puts the onus on Kyler. But that's the thing, is like everybody's just looking at this from the perspective that it's not going to work. And so if you go in with that perception, well, then you've already lost. So then what's even the point? Like, what's even the point? But I think that goes back to kind of how I opened the show. Like, maybe it wasn't completely 50%, but I mean, there was a large swath of fans that wanted them to retain Josh Rosen, draft Quentin Williams because they don't know how to judge talent when Nick Bosa was right there, and go and be a 4-12 or 5-11 team every year because, you know, but. And they were okay with that. And then they drafted Kyler and it was like, well, look how bad he is. And then he wins Rookie of the Year. And it's like, well, you know, he's not going to be the NFL is going to be able to figure him out. And then he goes out and he's a Pro Bowler. And he's got to progress. He can't win from the pocket. Now
he improves every passing metric. He's an MVP favorite for half the season. The Cardinals are 7-0. They're 10-2. He's a Pro Bowler. Come on. Like he has like honestly, Kyler has exceeded, except for postseason win, he's exceeded every reasonable expectation that has been heaped upon him as a number one pick in 2019.
Yep. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out, man, because again, I don't think I've said it enough on this show, but the reality is Jess and I are not saying we agree with the route that Kyler has gone in order to get this point across. We're not saying that at all. What we are saying is we understand what he's trying to say and what he's trying to do for an organization that, quite frankly, has never been able to sustain success or have a player that has pushed the organization to do such a thing. I hope it works out. I hope they sign him to that extension. And to your point, I hope he then takes the onus on himself of, okay, now comes the work. I did the first part. I was the number one overall pick. I was the rookie of the year. I was a two-time Pro Bowler. Now comes, you know, push. You know, there's only one All-Pro quarterback every year. It's going to be tough. But if you're winning division championships, if you're competing for NFC championships, nobody's going to care. Like, nobody's going to care. And so go do that with that contract extension. If you don't, then they'll be bad.
People will hate him, and
we'll still be in the same spot we are.
Yeah, we'll be a team that people think's bad, so it's fine.
But the difference is, all the people that dislike him and don't think that they should pay him, the team will actually be bad then too. So instead of being an 11-win playoff team, they'll be like a 4 or 5-win non-playoff team. So at least, you know, if the people that don't want to re-sign Kyler, think of it that way. If you're right, this team's going to be really bad for the next 4 or 5 years if they do re-sign him. And that means that they're going to be able to accumulate all the draft picks.
Yes.
Yeah. All those juicy draft picks that they've had for the last 35 years since they moved to the Valley and have done nothing. So, I mean, we can continue the cycle. It's going to be so awesome.
It'll be great. Those good old Cardinals. Anyway, that will wrap up this bonus edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Seth and I will be back next week as we originally planned to do our free agency preview, where we will we'll talk about players to sign, players who fit, and more. We'll be back again next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening always. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Sea Red! Rise up! Sea Red! Rise up! Sea Red!